What is up, everybody? Happy Friday to you all. And even though the Bengals season isn't going the way that a lot of us had hoped, wanted, expected, we're still here with you Friday and taking some of your questions. And I wish some of the questions would be more like, hey, who do we need to beat to get the one seed and all that kind of stuff. Instead, we're talking about probably coaching changes, personnel changes, comparing apples to oranges as it goes to franchises because of some of the questions we've already started to receive. Of course, you can get yours into us through a variety of means, whether that's on one of the live streams, YouTube, the Cincy Jungle Facebook page, one of the Twitter accounts that we stream live to. We'll be paying attention there. There is a comment section on a post on Cincy Jungle with the Bengals mailbag area. If you want to get it to the obinsider@gmail.com, we'll kind of be looking there too. But I'm Anthony Cazenza, by the way. Probably should have introduced who we are. Anthony Cazenza, and he is John Sheeran. Happy Friday to you, John. I wish it was under some better Bengals circumstances, but hey, we're breathing, we're talking Bengals, and still having a little bit of fun.
Yeah, you get one more day of rest before you have to watch this team again. I want to give a quick apology, though, to T. Higgins. I tried to stand up really quickly last night, and I think I pulled something in my leg. So I feel you, man. You know, I feel you. I could just be getting old. I don't know. I've grown up a lot on the show.
Yeah, you've matured thanks to the Orange and Black Insider. And of course, we are part of the Believe Podcast Network, the Believe in Cincy podcast channel, along with a lot of other great shows. Matt and Willie No Ball with the coach Matt Minnick and Willie Lutz, as well as Talking Football with Bengal Jim and Friends, and of course Three and Out with Jason and Kevin. And you can get those on your favorite audio streamer, whether that is iTunes, Spotify, any of the major ones. Go check it out. You got to resubscribe to the Believe in Cincy, BLEAV, a little bit of a different spelling, Believe in Cincy podcast channel. And yeah, go subscribe to the YouTube channel. You can do that with the show icon underneath John's side of the screen there by the Cincy Jungle icon. Go hit that, hit the subscribe button, the bell, do all the things that we beg and ask you to do to just feed our egos and give us attention. And of course, check us out on one of the other platforms I mentioned that we stream live to. But let's get us started. And of course, again, want to encourage all of you to get us your questions, whether it's through one of the live chats, on the Cincy Jungle comment section, on Twitter, any of that. We'll be monitoring a lot of different stuff to talk about it. So John, I'm going to let you bat lead off, my friend. What do you got for us?
So we had some comments in the Cincy Jungle post regarding some coaching changes and whatnot. So I think I feel like we've answered this maybe 2 weeks ago, but I think it's nice to get a little baseline out there from Cincy Mike 21. How much coaching turnover can we expect? The Brown family is not going to fire Zach. He deserves it for squandering the best wide receiver and quarterback in the league. Can we at least hope for a whole new defensive staff and maybe offensive line? And I feel like this is a good question to start, because that is where I would expect the changes to be made. You cannot run back this entire staff next year. The blame is going to be put on the defensive line, which is the defense in general. You're probably looking at a new defensive coordinator. With that comes a lot of new assistants on that side of the ball. And if you're making changes on the offense, you're looking at the fact that this offensive line is still not producing at the way that you would want. You probably need a new vision there with someone who values new attributes and getting new players in there in general. So yeah, defense, offensive line, that's where you're looking at, I would say, for any coaching changes to be made if you're running this back with Zach.
I think trench coaches are a must. I think the secondary coaches probably need to be looked at. I think you're going to see more overhaul on the defense than you are the offense. You know, it's kind of a shame, because a couple of years ago we were applauding Marion Hobby with, you know, his work with that Super Bowl team. I remember asking him a question on one of the virtual media days, you know, talking about different stuff. And I think I asked Zach a question about him as well at that same presser, and it's just like, wow, how the mighty have fallen, right? It's just like, oh, being able to get pressure from not only both of your edge players on a pretty consistent basis, but being able to mix and match interior guys to get different pressure. Again, that BJ Hill, Larry Ogunjobi, and DJ Reader mix that they had that year was just really special. And unfortunately, things kind of fell apart. There were injuries, there was free agency attrition. And, you know, I think we can make all these scapegoats. And there's another question that we're definitely going to get to in just a second. But we can make all of these scapegoats and coaches and all of, you know, why didn't they, you know, retain this guy and all of this. It's all symptoms of a larger problem. And it's a trickle-down effect. I think we can agree they were able to mask it. Joe Burrow was able to mask it. Zach Taylor was able to mask it. And some good free agency hits on the outside were able to mask it for a few years. And now all of a sudden, here we are again in a year that everybody thought this was kind of the Super Bowl year. The Super Bowl's in, you know, New Orleans, Louisiana. You thought the boys, the LSU boys, were going to go back home. And it is anything but that at this point. And so, you know, if we talk about the head coach, it's a little hard for me because he's really an offensive minded guy. He's, you know, primary play caller, et cetera, et cetera. There are faults there, but they're still putting up a ton of points and they're passing, you know, they're, you know, Joe Burrow's having an MVP like season. So you go, okay, that's one side of the coin. But the other side of the coin is you can't finish. You can't finish games. You can't close out close games. You can't. Zach Taylor has a poor divisional record in the AFC North. I know it's a tough division, but and Burrow's been hurt still. I mean, that's how you have success. If you're the Cincinnati Bengals, you have to be successful in the AFC North, and they have not done so under Zach Taylor as a whole. And so, again, I think these are all symptoms of a bigger problem. But I still, at this point, unless this one score issue continues through the season and the Bengals have a pretty terrible record at the end of the season, I expect Zach to be here next year. I expect the changes and the scapegoats to be on the defensive side of the ball for the most part, probably offensive line as well.
100%. The more you talk about it, the more you realize that just firing the defensive side of the ball and getting an offensive line coach, it's not going to just magically fix everything. It is just a larger macro problem that I think, honestly, the more that you talk about it, the more it just makes sense to completely start over and just get a new coaching staff. Because at the end of the day, the entire team vision, the way they operate, is under the guise of Zach Taylor. And if you feel like that there are just bigger issues than just a terrible pass rush and a lack of development on one side of the ball, that is kind of the route that you need to take. But like you said, this is not a franchise that likes to fire coaches when they still have money to be paid on their contracts. And that's the reality here. And that's what the one thing that Zach has going for him. And yeah, I think in general, the sense is they're going to give him one last shot with potentially better assistance to maximize what is here, because it's going to be really hard to rebuild this roster in 1 year. You're just hoping that a new faces and new directions and some parts of the coaching staff can just get the most out of this team, because clearly the staff as currently comprised is not capable of doing that.
And quite honestly, I don't know that that's going to do it. I don't know that, you know, making assistant coaches, you know, I don't know that that's going to do it. It may be a Band-Aid over some things, but I don't really see that being the answer. I think, you know, you have your quarterback, you didn't pay or haven't paid yet some of your star players. And, you know, that's the maddening thing. And I guess we can kind of transition into it yet another, you know, another, and quite honestly, I'm trying to find this on the Bengals site. So John, if maybe you want to look to see on the staff side, see if you can share on the Bengals website, their staff side, because we got a question on the Cincy Jungle live chat that I thought was pretty interesting. And it's just, you know, point blank question, which was essentially, it's from Kirkmo. What is the typical size of an NFL scouting department? So what we've done is I don't have that number quite honestly on hand, and I think it varies obviously from team to team, and teams operate in different ways. But as I said the other night, that I think the Bengals need to be completely obsessed in terms of how they work their team, how they build their front office, etc. I think they need to be obsessed primarily with the Steelers, but also with the Ravens. The Ravens are a pinnacle of success as well. And the Bengals have struck on wide receivers. They've struck on their quarterback. You know, they've had really a nice string, to say what you want about Andy Dalton. But I mean, for the past 20 years plus, they've been set at quarterback between Carson Palmer, between Andy Dalton, and between Joe Burrow. And they've had varying degrees of successes with each one of those guys. Only one has secured playoff wins. But I mean, John, I think there are franchises out there that if you said, hey, you had a pretty stable quarterback situation for the better part of two decades. I mean, there's criticisms of the first two guys, I know, but I think a lot of teams would take that. That's kind of the Packers deal when they had Favre, and then they, you know, they had Rodgers, and now Love is playing pretty good ball. So it's kind of, not every team can say that, right? So I don't know if you found, did you find the Bengals part of the site, John? Were you able to?
I've run into this issue before because it's not on the Bengals. You have to manually search Bengals front office, and it's like a hidden page in the team website. I don't know why it's hidden. I don't know what they have to hide, but it exists.
Did you find it? Did you find it? Okay, can you share it? Do you mind sharing it?
Yeah, for sure. It's please. It's just a long it is a long list of just the entirety of the entire front office. So it's not just devised up into just personnel and just team execs or whatever. So, I mean, it's just in this list, there's like a handful of scouts, like maybe two or three. Christian Sarkisian, Andrew Johnson, Trey Brown is the senior personnel executive, Duke Tobin, director of player personnel. You have a college scouting director, you have a pro scouting director. And so at the end of the day, in terms of people that are listed here, it's like six or seven, right? I've been told in the past that the Bengals have more people in the scouting department than what is listed on the website. I don't know why, if that's the case, they're not listed. I don't know what is there to hide. I think it just kind of seeds more distrust in the process in general, but that's what I've been told in the past. I don't know if it still remains to be true because this was a couple of years ago when this was, you know, first starting to become an issue that people cared about. But yes, like in terms relative to other places in the NFL, particularly in the AFC North, it's not the biggest scouting department. I have some thoughts on that, but we can look at like the Steelers and Ravens in comparison for sure.
Yeah. So let's just do that. And then I definitely want to get your thoughts on this. So in comparison, of course, you've got president, vice president. This is the Pittsburgh Steelers, by the way. Arthur Rooney II is president, Arthur Rooney Jr., vice president. Here's your coaching staff, et cetera, et cetera. Quality control coach, football operations, Omar Khan, general manager, Dan Rooney Jr., vice president of player personnel. Now, obviously that is a family member there. Andy Weidel, assistant general manager. So not only do they have a vice player, a general manager, vice player, vice president of player personnel, but you have an assistant to the general manager in Andy Weidel. And then of course, director of pro scouting senior. So, I mean, you look here you go. Look at these college scouts right here. Scouting coordinator, director of football administration, team operations coordinator. So you can see here, that's pretty robust, right? For football operations, scout. And that obviously they have the coaches that contribute and go to things as well. Football analytics coordinator, et cetera. Scouting intern. By the way, that might explain a little bit of what you're talking about. Maybe those are interns and they just don't list them that help. So that's that. But I mean, you could see here, I know the Bengals page was a little jumbled and disorganized in this regard. And maybe they do that intentionally to make the list look longer than it actually is, but this is just the football operations portion listed on the Steelers website. And you can see that is pretty robust between scouts, scouting assistants, various capacities here. I'm going to share the Ravens next because look, we can go around the league and look at the Chiefs and all of these other teams that are successful, the Bills, you know, et cetera. But to me, again, I think these are where, if you're the Bengals, this is where you got to keep up with the Joneses, so to speak. And these are the models of success. These are the ones that have the robust player personnel. Here you go, Eric DeCai. And this is, by the way, they've got business intelligence. You know, there's all kinds of different stuff here that you could look at, but business media. But when you look at player personnel for the Baltimore Ravens, Eric DaCosta, executive vice president and general manager. Ozzie Newsome, still the executive vice president, helping out in capacities there. You have a vice president of player personnel, vice president of football administration, vice president of research and development, a director of player personnel, a director of college scouting, a director of learning and development, assistant director. So not only they have directors, they have assistant directors, they have GMs, they have assistant GMs, and then you've got area scouts, Northeast area scout, scout, quantitative analyst, etc. I mean, the list goes on, player services manager, all kinds of different stuff. So again, a very robust list there, and you would think based on what we know or maybe even not know about the Bengals front office staff, football operations staff, I think isn't Doug Rosfeld also on that list too? So the bottom line is the overall impression that you get when you look at two pinnacle franchises, two of the big boys in the AFC and in your own division, it is not a really it's not a comparable situation. The Bengals have a far more lean front office staff, even though they have boosted it up the past handful of years. It is far more lean. There are not assistants too. There is not a true general manager, an assistant general manager, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's how they run things.
I am of the opinion that the Bengals hiring more scouts is not necessarily going to solve these issues, because they're going to hire people that they feel embody the things that they value and to make sure that they're all on the same page, right? And I think that's not necessarily the way that you should do it. You should bring in outside voices with a different perspective. And not saying that they only hire yes men. Like, of course, people have differing opinions in the war room and everything like that. Their problems come down to when the decisions need to be made in terms of drafting players and re-signing players and extending players. Those decisions are typically, unfortunately for them, the wrong ones. I have heard that like their scouting grades on a lot of players are aligned with the majority of the league. They don't reach that often compared to the consensus board. It's just that the things that they value, particularly in some positions along the trenches, they're archaic at this point. Like, and we talked about it, they typically value size over athleticism, and things that I think you could get away with 20 years ago, but it's not as effective nowadays. Bringing in more, I guess, help to scout the college landscape, sure, I think in theory it helps, but at the end of the day, the scouts can only do so much in terms of grading them. And again, the grades are more or less aligned with how the rest of the league does it, how the Ravens and the Steelers do it. But the Ravens and the Steelers, they have the final call with their decision maker, with their GMs and their higher ups in the personnel department. And they value better things than on average than what the Bengals do. So I think it's still a problem at the top. And the fact that they only have a smaller amount of people telling them what their work is, I think that definitely doesn't help. But the problem to me still is that they need to reevaluate the things that they value. And therefore that they can utilize the scouting reports that they do receive from the people who work under them. And then the whole process, I think, becomes a little bit better. So scouting size, to me, not the biggest issue. It could improve things, but it needs to be a completely reworked vision of how they view certain positions if they ever want to get this thing to the point where the Steelers and Ravens are.
I think a fascinating, fascinating conversation to have with each of the heads of the Ravens, the Steelers, the Browns too, the Ravens, the Steelers, the Browns, and the Bengals. Simple question, very simple question. What's your identity as a football team? What is your identity? What is your, you use the word vision. What do you see? You know, what are words that describe your football team? And I think we could sit here and say, well, Pittsburgh Steelers, tough, physical attitude, right? I mean, that's just who they've been. Ravens a bit of the same, a little bit different now with Lamar and his just, you know, amazing talent. But I mean, they've been largely marked by physical defenses, getting after the passer and, you know, attitude. I can't really put my finger on what the Browns' identity would be. I mean, for a while there with Chubb in the defense, it would be kind of, you know, ground and pound, I guess, as well. But I what would you say the Bengals' identity is right now? What it's been? I mean, it's been at times it's been high flying offense, right? Opportunistic defense at times as well. Whether you go back to that 05 season or you know the past couple with you know 21-22. But what is I would just love to just ask, what is your vision for the identity of the Cincinnati Bengals? What is it?
Is Joe Burrow just doing things, you know?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's a very simple question, but I think it's like a hyper important question. And to your point, they're drafting who they deem are good players. They draft. We talked about this the other night about the Steelers know exactly who they are and they know exactly the type of players that they want to bring in. The Bengals, it feels like they just want to bring in good players, be it because they have a high draft position or what have you. And it works to some degree, but I don't know that they have a true grasp on who they want to be or who they are.
That's a good point. And I think they try to make this distinction with their offensive line that, you know, we don't have to be perfect, but we just need to be able to stand up to power and let Burrow just try to work his magic. And in doing so, you've completely bled the athleticism of the entire group, and therefore they can't open up the playbook enough against certain teams, and they can't grind out games with the run game because they can't generate movement, because they can't get out of their stance, because they're athletic mismatches. And on the defensive side of the ball, again, it's guys who I guess look the part physically but haven't proven to be consistent penetrators or pass rushers against college prospects. Like, players in college don't necessarily change from the NFL. They just kind of grow into who they already were in the first place. It is a fundamental failure of identifying the guys who can translate into the NFL. Guys who, yeah, maybe can hold their ground here and there, but it's a lot of archaic values that they have, and it just leads to the problems that they have today. Like, they have not been a good trench team in quite some time. Just watching the Lions game last night and the Packers game and defensive tackles making, you know, impact plays behind line of scrimmage, it's rare now to see that from the Bengals defense. It is rare, and I never thought that would be the case after watching Geno Atkins for a decade and DJ Reader for 3 years, but they don't have anyone who can do that. And until they identify guys who can do that, and that's just one of the many things that they have yet to acquire in the past couple of years, and it's led to the roster being where it is today.
And if you watch that game last night, Aiden Hutchinson's out. I mean, their Trey Hendrickson is out of the lineup, and they are able to still win games, win division games against good division opponents. I mean, I don't know. It kind of was because I don't pay a ton of attention to the NFC North. The Bengals don't play that division this year. And I mean, I know the Lions are good. I know Green Bay has been decent, but I'm looking at the records of the top three teams. I'm going, wow, that division is really, really good. The Lions win a tough game against a quality opponent at home. Their version of Trey Hendrickson is not in the lineup, and they are able to still generate pressure, make plays behind the line of scrimmage. Yes, they let up a lot of points, but again, good football team they played. So I think it's a very, and maybe, I mean, I guess I'll look at this with rosy colored glasses, but maybe this is the type of season that creates an off season where you go, all right, let's wipe the whiteboard clean here and let's really reassess who we are. What's our mission, values? I mean, if you want to go corporate business type of thing, I mean, who do we want to be? Who do we want to be? It's pretty simple. And I think they need to figure this out. This is an interesting comment by the Fool. I don't think you're a fool, by the way, but regardless, he or she says, I feel like Burrow has been our identity and that really isn't working. Yeah, it's kind of been all Joe Burrow. Anyway, let's move on. I thought that was a really interesting question that led us down to a passionate and a deep rabbit hole. So hopefully you found that kind of enlightening as we looked at a couple of different front offices within the division. Where do you want to go next, John?
We should probably address this because it was an article written by Sports Illustrated yesterday. Greg Schoonover is asking, would you guys trade Ja'Marr Chase? This team needs so much help all over, and the money you will have to spend to keep him. The answer is pretty strongly no from me. I imagine it's the same for you, Anthony, but do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's a no. It's a no. And I'm even with the time missed by him, I'm still of the mindset that you find a way to make it work, to have he and T. Higgins together. I mean, you've let certain pieces go because either number one, you felt that they were getting too old, they were coming off of a bad injury, they were too expensive, they didn't play a position that you valued as heavily, etc. There are now a number of cap casualties that could happen next year and should happen. Probably Sheldon Rankins. Someone made a funny comment on CJ about Sheldon Rankins as well. I mean, there are people, you know, on this roster that are kind of eating up potential salary cap space next year. If you kind of purge some of these players, all of a sudden you still have a lot of room, not only to re-sign Jamar Chase and re-sign T. Higgins. You have seen teams do this. You can do this. The Eagles have paid two guys. I think the Dolphins have too, right? I mean, I think they're teams that have extended multiple wide receivers. It can be done. And I think it should be done. And I think it should be done not only for the sake of the offense. I mean, you see when T. Higgins is healthy and out there and producing, what he and Jamar Chase and Joe Burrow can do together. But I also think that is part of this culture thing where I think these players are starting to sense, man, you let DJ Reader walk out the door. You let Jesse Bates walk out the door. You let these valuable guys walk out the door. And now you're about ready to do the same in T. Higgins. You can't keep everybody, but if you're going to let all of these guys go and not pay them, who are you paying? You're just paying your quarterback and a wide receiver. And then you think that's going to be the cure all to it. You can't operate that way. And again, we with the example of the football operation side of things, I mean, it's just lean resources, I suppose, but still, there are ways to make this work. And you know, obviously the defense needs a lot of work this next offseason, but I still think that should be a priority for the Bengals to keep him on this roster.
And I just want to refer to like the original premise of this, because it was, I think Matt, I can't remember his last name, like Verdemy or something like that, who proposed, like, it was like a similar situation with the Chiefs and Tyreek Hill. It's not similar because Tyreek Hill was looking for his third contract at like 28, 29 years old. And the Chiefs not only had Mahomes, they had Chris Jones, Travis Kelce, a couple other really good players locked in for the future. Aside from Joe Burrow and maybe Orlando Brown, I guess, because he's got 2 years left on his deal, who here is locked in for the future who's worth it? No one. There's no one. If you trade Jamar Chase for what I would assume it would have to be at least like 3 first round picks, you have zero choice but to pay Trey Hendrickson and T. Higgins whatever they want. If you trade Jamar Chase and you still don't find the capacity in your wallet to pay the only other players who are worth that type of investment, just pack it in. Just trade Burrow right at that point. Sell the team. Like,
call yourself a farm team at that point.
Exactly. And
really. Yeah.
Like, you cannot part ways with your second best player, one of the 10, 15 most valuable players in the entire league, and do nothing to counter it, to compensate for it. It's just acquiring draft picks at that point for the sake of acquiring draft picks. They have no base to do this, unlike where the Chiefs were, where they felt like they were comfortable to do that because they had the rest of the team built out and a lot of other cornerstone pieces locked in for the future. The Bengals don't have that. And Jamar Chase is 100,000% worth the money anyways for his second, not his third, but his second contract. There is no reality where trading Jamar Chase makes sense for this team.
Absolutely not. And by the way, Brad Hance on the Cincy Jungle Facebook says, John Sheeran should be hired by the Bengals organization. He sees things that the average fan doesn't. Just bring me along as an intern, will ya? I don't have the same insight as you. I don't have the same insight as you do. So just make sure you carve out a little cubicle for me or something, will ya? Let's go to the Dustin, who is a faithful viewer, listener. Appreciate this and the super chat here. If you want your questions to take precedence, these do take precedence because we're greedy. So appreciate that, Dustin. Duke drafted better prior to the Taylor era. Imagine Burrow with some of the Dalton rosters. This is why you don't let coaches shop, quote, shop for groceries. There are elements to this team where you go, man, What if, you know, when Burrow started, what if he had a prime AJ Green? You know, what if, I don't know. I mean, there's all kinds of what ifs. There's, you know, the 1 year of Jeremy Hill with Gio Bernard, you know, all that, the receivers that you had aside from AJ Green, Mosinu, Marvin Jones, et cetera. I mean, I think they've done an okay job kind of replicating some of the stuff at the wide receiver group, but obviously Dustin brings up a nice, you know, there's that, what is that series on Disney Plus, Marvel's What If, right? So there is the Joe Burrow What If with the 2015 roster, that sort of thing, but it just never seems to coalesce with the Bengals. It never seems to come together at the right time in a lot of different respects.
This is interesting to me because the statement of drafting better implies that the players that were drafted before Zach Taylor ended up being better than the players that were drafted under Zach Taylor. And I don't think it's purely just, and I know I just like 10 minutes ago, I was saying that players don't change for the most part. Who they were in college becomes who they are in the NFL. And I think in general, like the Bengals were more successful identifying players like drafted outside of the first round in past years compared to recent years. But also, I think the coaching staff takes part of the blame here, which is what I think Dustin was saying. Not just identifying players initially, but then developing them, like getting the most out of players who weren't just drafted in the top five or the first round. That seemed to be more of a case in the Marvin Lewis days, despite all of that coaching staff's flaws and everything like that. You just mentioned like Mohamed Sanu, Marvin Jones, George Iloka, Clint Bowling, like getting the most out of these guys that like you need to be able to hit if you're the Bengals, because at that point in time, you weren't utilizing free agency, and that's how they were able to be competitive. But I think this also goes hand in hand with this coaching staff's inability to develop a lot of the players that need to be developed, that aren't just sure things coming out of college. So it kind of goes hand in hand with just not only scouting, but then actually developing. And then there's the marriage of the guys that you are trying to develop maybe were never really a fit for this team in the first place, which again, these are huge issues that can't be just boiled down to just a black and white type of thing. Most of these things are gray.
Now there are exceptions to rules, but also you got to look at some of these classes in that Andy Dalton era. And right now where you look at some of the second and third round picks, you know, Joe Mixon, notwithstanding, T Higgins, notwithstanding, obviously, but God bless him, he was on our show and he's a great man. But Devin Still, I mean, that, and I think that was not really, I don't chalk that up so much to a lack of ability inability to transition to the pros. Obviously, he had a lot personally going on. I think that just, you know, I can understand that. Brandon Thompson, another defensive lineman that just never really came out to much. Obviously, Jackson Carman. We thought Cam Taylor-Britt was the next big thing, and he has been struggling. You look at DJ Turner, obviously, you know, showed some nice things this year, flashed at the beginning of last year, but hurt now. I mean, those are the picks. You can applaud the Marvin Joneses, the Georgia Locas, as you should, because those were good players found in late rounds, and there are exceptions to every rule. But the Bengals in these second and third rounds at times in that Andy Dalton era and right now, there have been some problems. There have been some problems in those rounds, and those are critical roster building rounds. So, and if you notice the misses that I largely mentioned, where are they at, John? They're in the trenches. They're trench misses, and that's where you can ill afford, if you do have a quarterback that is capable and or all world, like a capable Andy Dalton, an all world Joe Burrow. Those are the areas you cannot miss or lack or not develop. Maybe it wasn't a miss. Maybe it's just not developed properly.
Right. There's also, I think in general, the Bengals have always kind of struggled drafting outside of the top 20. Like the makes, the hits that I can think of off the top of my head, Kevin Zeitler, for sure. Other than that, far and few between, I would say. Whereas the Chiefs have kind of proven that doesn't matter where you draft in the first round, you can find a Trent McDuffie, you can find a George Karloftis. I was just thinking about this the other day. Like from like 2021 to 2023, the Bengals and Chiefs made very similar types of investments at similar positions, and the Chiefs have swept them. Like Creed Humphrey over Jackson Carman, easily. Trent McDuffie over Dax Hill. As of right now, McDuffie's blowing Dax Hill out of the water. George Karloftis over Miles Murphy, Trey Smith over Cordell Volson. Like, very similar approaches, kind of similar rounds with those positions. One team just nailed everything, and one team is just struggling to keep his head above water. Like, you cannot miss this often with these picks, or your roster is going to look exactly like it does now. So I guess the Bengals can only draft pretty consistently, at least with this pairing of front office and coaching staff, near the top of the first round. And then that's not good if you want to be competitive every single year.
Who do you want to be, and can you develop who you bring in? I mean, it sounds so simple, but maybe not as simple. We'll be here for a little while longer. This is a passion-filled listener questions live. We've got a number of others, and you can get yours to us in the next handful of minutes. YouTube super chats take precedence, but we'll be answering others here. I think I picked the last one there with Dustin. So where do you want to go next, John?
I guess we'll go to my number one fan, Brad Hance, again. He's asking about, why is Jordan Battle starting now? Doesn't that make you question Lou Narumo, especially after the way Battle performed once he stepped in? Started the second half of last season. Doesn't have a choice at this point. Von Bell is just not it. Geno Stone is absolutely not it. Jordan Battle is not necessarily like a deep safety, a free safety. So he's playing over Von Bell at this point. And it's not completely, right? Like, I think Von Bell ended up playing 18 or so snaps against the Steelers in some certain spots. But you have to see what the future of that position looks like, because it's clearly not Geno Stone or Von Bell. And I agree, like, Jordan Battle deserves some type of a more fair shot in the preseason and in training camp to maybe earn that job outright. Even when Von Bell was initially signed, like, I found it hard to believe that he was coming in here to be an unquestioned starter because of how Jordan Battle finished last season. I guess there's some things about Jordan Battle that we just don't know. Maybe he just didn't practice well enough, and whatever the case may have been, there just wasn't that level of trust. But at this point, they don't really have a choice. They need to exhaust all options to see what the future of that position looks like, if there is a future on, if there are future options that are on this roster currently.
Yeah, I think Battle still has a bright future. There's been ups and downs this year, and I think from what I can kind of gather, I think he was pretty disappointed that the Bengals brought back Von Bell. I think he thought he was maybe going to step into that starting role, and not only that, get snaps early, and he really wasn't getting any. I think now, as you mentioned, it is more out of necessity. And I think this entire secondary, yes, it's been hit by injury, but this entire secondary needs to be looked at for, you know, some pretty major overhaul, because now you thought you were pretty set with Cam Taylor-Britt as your CB1. You were going to figure things out with Dax and or DJ Turner there at CB2. And now both of those guys are out for the year. You brought in Josh Newton that you liked as a day three guy. There's been ups and downs there. And of course, the safeties have been largely a mess. Battle's probably, like you said, been the best of the group. But given the performances, I don't know how much that's really saying. But like you said, I think obviously this is a time where you have to say, you know, we got to see what we got out of some of these young guys, and we got to see if there's a future here. So I think that's the reasoning there. I do think Battle does have a future with this team. Again, I think it's, I hate to keep banging this drum, but identity. What do you want to do? Who do you want to be? What do you want to do on defense? You know? So it'll be interesting to see what the Bengals look for in a safety this coming offseason. There's no doubt that they will be, you know, searching for one. I'd sit back and laugh in not a, you know, I think this is really funny, but a sad, funny type of way if they go after someone that's, you know, higher pick, like a Jesse Bates type of player, because it's like, well, you could have just paid exactly that kind of laugh. You could have just paid the guy and, you know, not had some of these problems. But anyway, that is, here you go. John, are you leaving the number one Bengals podcast with the puppets? I hope not. Anthony, am I Daddy-O or Hoji? No, I'm not. I do not have the talent of any of those three, much less being one of the, do we call them puppets? I don't know what we call them. They're just Daddy-O and Hoji, right? Puppets.
Yeah. You can call them puppets. Don't sell yourself short compared to those guys. That's all I'll say.
No, they're great. You guys do great stuff there. So thank you, The Fool. Appreciate you. Let's, I don't, this is a really, I don't really know where we're going with this one. But it's a very, it's just a very, Michael Clark just says Miles Murphy question mark. There are so many things to unpack here. There are so many routes to take with this, whether that's, is he the guy? Are they using him right? Is he getting enough snaps? Obviously one of these young guys, you got to play and see what you get out of him. I mean, you want to answer any one of those like three or four questions that come with a two-word question that just says Miles Murphy question mark?
I thought he was just throwing that in there when we were talking about like draft picks that didn't.
Right. I did too. But now I'm like, then I looked at it again. I'm like, this is an interesting question. It's just Miles Murphy.
Who knows? He's still behind Joseph Asai in this depth chart in this rotation. He's still not playing more than Sam Hubbard. I can't really excuse either one, because even if he's not as good as either of them, I don't think that you know that for sure. And yeah, you can see things in practice and you can take note of things in the film room and whatnot. Let him see what he's got on the field for more than just a, you know, 15 snaps a game, because you need to find out if this guy is good or not, because you're about to go into year three and you don't really know.
Yeah. I mean, there are flashes, but it's not consistent. And I think that explains that can be said about a lot of players, a lot of young players on this team right now that they've drafted flashes, but not there, or injuries and that sort of thing. And Murphy did have he started the season with an injury, correct? So, I mean, that could have slowed things for him as well, but we haven't even really talked about other things on the defense. Logan Wilson now probably done for, not really related to Miles Murphy so much, but Logan Wilson now done for the year. He had a knee procedure. So that's going to hurt the Bengals there. And obviously we talked the other day, Evan McPherson now on IR with a groin issue. So, I don't know if this is kind of the, hey, you know, Logan's had a knee issue, played through it for a while, and now it's 4-8. Let's time to, you know, let's pack it up and get it right, because they're packing up the season. Or I don't know. But that's a blow to the defense that's already been unable to stop anybody. So that's not good news for the Bengals there. And there are a lot of injuries. I'm sure we'll hear that excuse a lot throughout the offseason as to the defensive struggles. And I mean, You've heard this before, John, where, you know, off season, well, why didn't they make this move? Why didn't they get that guy? Where? And then, you know, the Bengals tell us, well, we've got a lot of guys coming back from injury and blah, blah, blah. Can't rely on that so much. I mean, if they're star players, you do rely on that somewhat, but you still got to bolster the roster. You still got to make moves.
There's just no excuse for how bad this defense is at the end of the day. That's the just summing up the entire thing. Yes, there's coaching issues. Yes, there's personnel issues. Both are just have been compounded into something worse, and that's where you're left with today. So should we end with one more from Micah Peterson regarding draft order? He's asking, do you think the Bengals should finish with a top 10 pick or win some games and finish with a lower pick? As much as I want them to win, feels like higher draft picks will be a better outcome for this year. I'm looking at the order right now. There are 8 teams who are 3-9 and worse. Typically, 6 wins could get you in the back half of that, or like, you know, the 8, 9, or 10 spot. That would probably be how I would project it for this year. I highly doubt that any of these bottom 8 teams are going to finish with more than 6 wins, including like the Titans, the Browns, who are future opponents for the Bengals, the Jets, Panthers, etc. So if the Bengals finish 6-11, I could see them getting like pick 9 or 10. 7 wins probably puts them in that 11 to maybe 14 range. I don't know enough about this draft class to be able to answer if they would need a top 10 pick to get like one of the, like, it, I, like, because every draft class is different. And I think I've heard some things about this class maybe not being so top heavy, where a lot of teams would like to trade back. So I think they're going to be fine in terms of getting like a good prospect wherever they are in like the bottom 14 or whatever. But I think if you're hoping for a top 10 pick, you're rooting for no more than 6 wins for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I want them to win. I mean, I this team's too good to And I know we talked about all the roster flaws and everything already, but I still think they are too good to be 4-8. Maybe they weren't going to be a Super Bowl team this year. Maybe they weren't going to, you know, be the best in the AFC North like we maybe thought initially, but I still feel that they're too good. And obviously that one score deal, that record of 1-7, that kind of points to that, I think, a bit, right? I mean, it's just, you're right there. And these one score games, it's the Steelers, two against the Ravens, it's the Chargers, right? I mean, these are good teams that you're just not able to finish against. And so I think they're right there in a lot of different respects. It is taking Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase playing hero ball in order for that to kind of take place. But I'd like to see him win out. I think there's been a, I don't know what the word is, somber, or there's been a much different, in a negative way, air and aura out of the locker room when you see the interviews of players. And it's not just as the losses piled up. You kind of, it felt kind of in the summer and in the early weeks and all of that, it just kind of felt, whereas in the past there was confidence, there was a lot of smiles, maybe I'm reading too far into it, but it feels like there has just been a different air from the get-go. And I think we talked about it in summer, John, where it was, we called it more business-like, right? It was serious and we're focused and all of that. Maybe it wasn't that. Maybe it's like just, yeah, like stale, blasé. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into that, but it feels like the confidence level has been gone from this team that we saw in those teams that made big runs.
Yeah, they experienced success. And I think in some aspects, they got complacent and they kind of lost that edge of just trying to keep pushing towards it. And also, you know, sustaining success is hard. That's why not a lot of teams do it. And clearly this team couldn't do it for more things than just the attitude of players and whatnot. But yeah, we talked also about the mental impact of watching the best players not get rewarded. Yep. And yep, that's still something that needs to be talked about. And you can only imagine it's only going to get worse unless that takes a new direction in the next coming months. And I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I think I bring that up because I said initially that I'd like to see him win. I'd like to see him, you know, if they can, granted, if they somehow win every single game, sneak into the playoffs, who knows? Could this team make noise? Maybe, but probably not with the defense that they're rolling out there. You know, I just like, after a year that's been so disappointing, it would be nice to see that pendulum go swing the other way in those one score games. They make a run of it. They make it interesting at the end. That's kind of just my hope. And I see the logic in, you know, wanting to get a top 10 pick. Obviously you get a premier player, but I still would like to see this team operate in a way with the draft where even if you're lower in the pecking order, the draft order, if you see a premier player that you want to get that you think can, you know, alter your franchise's trajectory, move up and get them. Package picks, mortgage the future, whatever. Your window is now. Your quarterback is here now. Move up, get the premier players and not sit back and say, well, oh, this guy fell to us. This guy fell to us. We can't believe he was still there. Well, maybe he was there for reasons that other teams saw that you didn't see, right? And if we're talking about the draft, again, I mean, you look at some of these players, if you're going to draft the trench players in the second, third, and fourth round, you have to develop. You have to hit on these guys. And the Bengals, there's a lot. You can go back 10 years or so and look at the middle round picks of defensive linemen, and there's a lot of them in there, and offensive linemen, where you go, oh boy, your Michael Jordans, and the list goes on and on and on and on and on.
I'm depressed now. I think we should probably stop.
I know. Can we say something nice at the? It's been a passionate listener questions live. Is there any other? Let me take one more look. See if there's any quick ones at the comment section here. I know there was quite a few there earlier. I don't know if it's loading up for me. Let me see. But let's kind of start wrapping it up, John. I don't know. Do you want to talk about the Dallas game? Any other updates aside from, you know, I mentioned Logan Wilson and obviously Evan McPherson. Anything else you want to mention?
I think CeeDee Lamb has said he's going to play. He's on track to do so. So that's going to be the biggest name on the Cowboys injury report because he's not practicing. Orlando Brown Jr. is doubtful. I doubt that he's going to play. There was a question about what the offensive line is going to look like. If that's the case, it's going to be Cody Ford at left tackle. Cordell Volson again to left guard. Michael Parsons is licking his chops thinking about that. But yeah, it's unlikely Orlando Brown Jr. is going to play. At this point, you're wondering if he's also going to be shut down for the end for the rest of the season, just like Logan Wilson, just like Evan McPherson. I imagine with a lot of injuries like that, that's probably going to be the move. They're just telling us that we don't want to risk these guys in a lost season. That doesn't mean that Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase are going to sit out games when they're healthy. Both those guys have their own reasons to want to continue playing, but that's just what they're dealing with right now.
I don't know that you answered what your preference was for the Bengals on that last question. You talked about what it takes. Did you say what you preferred? Do you want the Bengals to kind of tank and get the high picks? And maybe they luck into, you know, a Ja'Marr Chase situation or something like that? Or do you think that or suck their way into a Ja'Marr Chase situation, I guess? Or do you say, hey, you know, try and make a, you know, hopefully they make a run at this thing, sacrifice the draft picks, and I don't know.
It's tough because this team is reactionary. They're not proactive. So if they win like 3 or 4 games, I think it might change how they view addressing the offseason. Whereas I look at them right now and my takes are pretty locked in regardless of if a dead cat bounce situation occurs. I think in general, though, when you have the quarterback in place, you want to try to build as much momentum into the next season as possible.
Yeah.
Tanking's not really worth it unless you are going for a quarterback, in my opinion. And I don't think there's a lot of prospects that are worth tanking for in this class. But if it impacts them making potentially a decision that could save them from completely wasting Joe Burrow's career, that's kind of an issue to me.
Yeah. There's logic to both. Like you said, it would be so very Bengals if they, you know, if they're 8-9, right, and they just missed the playoffs, that sort of thing. And it's like, well, the coaching staff had it and then the one score games. And then all of a sudden there's not the changes that we've said, you know, so far throughout most of this fall need to be made as a very Bengals thing to do. But regardless, we'll see what happens. We've been here almost an hour. You guys have been killing it with the questions. Pick, thank you very much for all the comments and everything throughout various mediums. This is the Orange and Black Insider, part of the Believe, BLEAV podcast network and the Believe in Cincy podcast channel. If you like the audio side of things, go get the subscribe to the Believe in Cincy podcast channel. There are a number of shows on there, including ours. And of course, if you like the YouTube stuff, we'll be putting on some different stuff up there, especially as the off season approaches. We'll be doing more of that. And hopefully, I don't know, maybe the next couple of weeks, John, we'll be doing draft profiles. I don't know. We'll see. But regardless, thank you everybody for tuning in live. Thank you for listening after the fact. Subscribe to the show how you can, how you like. We appreciate all the feedback. We appreciate all the compliments and comments, questions, etc. John, have a great rest of your weekend, my friend. Hopefully you get to go do something fun this weekend or multiple things that are fun this weekend, not just one thing.
Maybe watch some winning football for a change, you know?
Oh, that'd be nice. That would be nice. That one last night was a fun one to watch. So, what could have been? Anyway, take care, everybody. Have a good weekend. We'll see you soon.